This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. After months of get-out-the-vote pushes, long lines at polling stations, and finally the casting of ballots, Americans watched the results roll in. What we know for sure is that despite all the changes in the last 4 years, a pandemic, historic protests, one thing remains the same. America is still divided. And this caught a lot of people by surprise. I knew it would be tight. I just thought with the surge in registrations and voting, maybe it wouldn't be that tight. And yet, here we are, right back at the divide. That rift, and let's be honest, it isn't new, it's just grown wider. It can be seen in our politics, religion, personal relationships, and even within ourselves. That's something Jackson Wolf has struggled with. He's an 18-year-old first-time voter from Wisconsin. This year, he worked on a Get Out the Vote campaign with a nonprofit called Leaders Igniting Transformation. Like millions of other Americans, he cast his ballot before Election Day.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
And are you registered?
I am.
For Jackson, voting for the first time was a big deal.
Okay. Your envelope, your ballot. You don't need to do anything on the back. You're going to complete the front by coloring in the ovals.
Okay.
Jackson is Black, gay, and for a long time was a devout Republican. He grew up in Sheboygan, a small city about an hour north of Milwaukee, where the majority of people are Republican and almost everyone is white. He lives in a state where Black men have been incarcerated at rates far higher than anywhere else in the country. The day after he voted, we gave Jackson a call and he told me about the unusual journey he's been on over the past few years.
So I grew up in, you know, white schools with predominantly white conservative peers. So in terms of fitting in, I made it work the best I could, kind of assimilating to that way of life, and just did my best to not be the one Black kid. Because as a young kid, you don't want to be the outlier.
Was there an internal struggle over who you were, as in, like, you are a young Black kid in a predominantly white area? Your mom is white too, right?
Yes. Yeah. For the longest time, I considered myself a hardgoing conservative. And the only time I talked about my Blackness was to talk about the absentee parent rate, was to talk about, you know, Black on Black crime rates. I learned to assimilate to my white peers who were all also raised with the ideologies that Black men in this country are lazy and, you know, they live in drug-ridden communities and that kind of thing. That was my mindset for the longest time.
So how have the past few years changed your perspective on all of that?
Coming into high school, I was still one of the only people of color. However, towards the end of middle school, beginning of high school, I came out as an openly gay man, which was, you know, another outlier for me. But, you know, being a gay man, it gave me different perspectives. I was still such a, you know, conservative individual that just had so much just hatred for myself and the way that I looked and my skin color and what it represented to me in my mind. And, you know, the turnaround in that, there was never an epiphany moment. It was more so a learning curve.
An important moment on that learning curve happened one day in May, when Jackson found his mother in tears.
I remember coming home that day from work, I think, and she was sitting on the couch and just, you know, crying. And I asked her what's wrong, what happened? And she asked me if I knew what was going on with George Floyd. And by that point, it's been a couple of days, you know, the world was in shock of what had happened. And I'm like, yeah, of course I know. And she was like, did you watch the video? And I was like, I haven't seen it. No, not yet. And so she shows me it. And I see this poor man crying out for his mother while he's being, held, with a knee in his neck. And she stops the video and she looks at me and she goes, what if that was you? That any one of these days, it could have been you. And, so I sat there with my mom and I was like, here's a white woman, the white woman that raised me. And she's more worried about my blackness than I am. What does that say about me? What does that say about how knowledgeable about, the threats that, I'll face one day?
I don't think it says anything about you that you didn't grasp it the same way she did, because it is such a complex thing. And as a parent of a black child, that fear can grip you in a way that it's unexplainable. And, in order to live in the skin you're in, you can't constantly be in that place of fight or flight. It's just not healthy.
Right.
So this is the first time that you voted for a presidential election, right?
Yes. Yeah. My very first time.
So tell me how that went. How did it feel?
It felt powerful because there is so much that hangs in the balance of this. Tensions here in America will be heavily influenced by this election. Healthcare will be heavily influenced by this election. My rights to marry will be heavily influenced by this election. Me, myself, and the way that I can live my life as a gay black man will be highly determined by the way this election turns out. With how much of a, growth I've had as a black man, and in the last 4 years, the climate of this country just going to absolute hell. It was so ironic that, after all that growth, this is the first election that I get to vote in.
A few days after Election Day, I decided to call Jackson back. Hey, Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
So what do you make of everything that's happening?
It's crazy right now. I really feel like right now as a country, we're all very tense, and I think everyone is collectively ready for this to move forward. But moving forward is kind of the scary part, and that's what everyone's worried about.
So now that you've voted and you've seen the results, does it give you faith in the system?
Well, it's hard to have faith in a system that is built with institutions that are designed to keep certain people down. I struggle even now. Of course, I will always stress the importance of a vote and stress that it is your voice. Still, no, I can't say that I have faith or complete faith. I have hope that things can get better and that these institutions and that the system can heal and progress. But right now, seeing how divided we are and seeing how messy the two-party system is in particular, I wouldn't say faith in the system is a good way to describe what I feel for it.
Jackson Wolf, first-time voter from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Jackson, thanks so much for talking to me again.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
One of the key goals of the Trump administration has been to dial back environmental regulations. In a moment, what that means for people exposed to a toxic chemical most of us have never heard of, but which is commonly used in factories, dry cleaners, and car repair shops. You're listening to Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. A network of anti-democratic groups are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/MJ.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Ever since President Trump took office, we've been reporting how he's ignored science to benefit business. He reversed an Obama-era plan to make cars cleaner. His administration tried to censor the human role in climate change from a key government report on sea level rise. And he blocked stricter control of methane emissions from oil and gas drilling. The New York Times has counted at least 100 rollbacks of environmental regulations. And earlier this year, we aired a show that uncovered how the White House overruled EPA scientists about the risks of an extremely toxic chemical.
The EPA published this enormous document, more than 700 pages long, a draft evaluation of the risks that people face from a toxic chemical called trichloroethylene, or TCE.
That's Reveal's environmental reporter, Elizabeth Shogren.
Most people have probably never heard of TCE, but it's a very widely used chemical. It's used to take grease off of stuff. You can find it in manufacturing, in car repair shops, at military sites, and dry cleaners across the country use it to remove spots from clothes.
So it's a really useful chemical, but it's also really dangerous.
Yeah, it can cause kidney cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it can harm your immune system. They've also found that if pregnant women are exposed to just tiny amounts of it, their babies can be born with heart defects.
The government is supposed to restrict or ban chemicals that are dangerous. But for the past 20 years, they've been studying the risks of TCE without doing anything about it. So this new report from the EPA is really important because it's a key step in keeping people safe. There's just one thing.
It's not the original report that EPA scientists actually wrote. I found out that the White House read through the original and made the EPA rewrite it.
The Trump administration changed the report, ignoring more than 20 years of research after the chemical industry attacked the science.
These veteran scientists were really outraged by this interference from the White House. They say they never experienced anything like it, and I was able to get a copy of their original draft.
We're going to tell you exactly how the White House changed that report and how Reveal's investigation led a senator to confront a White House official about rejecting science. But first, we're going back in time to trace the history of TCE and figure out how come we've been living with it for so long and why the government's done so little to protect us. Elizabeth begins our story at a Marine base in North Carolina early one morning.
The day starts early at Camp Lejeune. Marines jog through the base carrying logs the size of tree trunks on their shoulders, and they cheer each other on as they take on the obstacle course. I'm here to meet Johnny Orris and his son Chris. Johnny's a retired Marine in his 60s, and Chris is 45. We drive up to a big brick building. These days, it's the headquarters of one of the Marine Corps' top commanders.
And this used to be the old Naval Hospital, this big complex here. And this is where he was born. This is the beginning.
Out front, there's a big magnolia tree.
Let's go stand under the shady tree.
Johnny remembers rushing Chris's pregnant mom here. It was a steamy day in August 1974. By the time he parked the car and went into the hospital,
I was tapped on the shoulder and told that I had a new baby boy. I was really, really happy about that.
So this is where it all started, huh, Chris?
Yeah, so this is where I was born. And this is only the third time I've ever been here.
At the time, there were lots of young families at Camp Lejeune. The Vietnam War was winding down. Johnny and the other Marines were often gone for long periods of time, sometimes training, sometimes fighting. And while they were gone, they depended on the Marine Corps to keep their families safe.
And the Marine Corps ethos is honor, courage, and commitment that while you're gone, that they take care of your family.
The Orises lived on base. We drive to their old neighborhood. And they say a lot's changed here since the 1970s.
Dad, do you remember roughly where the house would have been as you're driving down this road?
As a matter of fact, it would have been right in here.
But the homes we're looking at today are a lot bigger than the ones Johnny remembers. We get out and stand on the sidewalk. Do any memories come back to you now that we're here?
Oh, yeah. I was a young corporal, a non-commissioned officer, loved being a Marine. I had some good memories of living here. I had some nice friends.
He used to ride motorcycles with a friend who lived across the street. But he has darker memories, too. That same friend's wife had three miscarriages.
I remember that distinctly because it was just so unusual for somebody to have that number of miscarriages.
Chris says he's also heard stories of stillborn babies and young children dying of cancer.
On the surface, this looks like a really peaceful, tranquil community. But 30 years ago, this was a horror house for many of the families that lived here.
A house of horrors. Chris says his mom recently gave him a photo taken here. It shows a woman who was a close friend of his mom's. In the picture, she's obviously quite pregnant.
About 7.5 or 8 months pregnant, and she lost that baby about a week after I was born. And my mom said that was just something that happened all the time around here, was that, you know, there were just so many women who got pregnant and, you know, lost their babies.
Johnny remembers no one had any idea what was causing these family tragedies. But one odd detail does stick out in his memory.
They came in and they put this box into our houses and said it was to monitor something, but we just had no, you know, we really didn't know. Nobody really asked. It was, you know, you're young, you know, you're not thinking about those things. You know, we all joke that they're spying on us.
And today, Johnny wonders what those boxes really were about. So decades passed. It was 2011. Chris was a 36-year-old banker living in Colorado, and his health started failing.
I was rapidly deteriorating. It was getting to the point where I couldn't walk across a room without getting out of breath.
That must have been terrifying.
It was really rough. You know, I was single parent. That was a very scary time for me.
His doctor ordered a bunch of tests.
I was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. You know, I passed out one time in the middle of my kitchen while I was cooking. And so the doctor ordered a angiogram.
That's when a cardiologist injects the blood vessels of your heart with a special dye that can be seen on x-rays.
And then the next thing you know, the doctors in a room are, go get so-and-so. Have him come take a look at this. And all of a sudden, there was a whole crowd of people around me. I fell asleep a little and I woke up and the doctor just looked at me and he said, you have less than 2 years to live. You have a heart defect and we can't believe you're still alive. We've never seen somebody like you with this type of a defect.
2 years to live, unless he has open heart surgery. Heart defects are common, but Chris's type is rare. Usually it's only seen in young children. so a pediatric cardiologist was called in. Johnny remembers flying to Colorado to be with Chris's son.
And when he went in to have surgery, thinking that I may never see him again, I really felt overcome with emotion. I was like, wow, how could this have happened to my son? And then, of course, after he came out of the recovery room, it was just horrible for the next few days being there and watching how he was suffering after the surgery.
And I remember the third night after the surgery, I remember giving up. I remember saying, I'm done, because it just hurt so much. And the pain was just incredible. And then I woke up the next day and I felt a lot better. That was a turning point. During my recovery, my doctors were so amazed at how quickly I'd recovered, because as soon as I hit that turning point, I started feeling something that I'd never felt before. I had all of this energy and I just felt so good, because for the first time in my life, I was getting oxygenated blood throughout my body. You know, my body wasn't starving for oxygen like it had been my entire life.
Within a month, Chris was in the gym, and after 2 months, he was back at work.
And so for me, recovery was an amazing thing, because every day I got better and better and better. And every day since that surgery has been a bonus day for me.
About a year later, Chris was at work, and a news story about Camp Lejeune popped up on his screen.
And so I opened it up, and bold letters up there, it said, toxic water contamination at Camp Lejeune, thousands of potential cancer cases and birth defects. And I said, wait a minute, what is this?
The toxic water Chris was reading about was contaminated with TCE. For decades, the base had used the chemical as a cleaner to get grease off of military equipment like missiles, helicopters, and tanks. A dry cleaner on the base, like a lot of dry cleaners, used TCE to get spots out. Over the years, the chemical got into the groundwater used for drinking. And that's how people could have gotten sick. TCE has been linked to leukemia, liver and kidney cancer, immune problems, miscarriages, and heart defects, like the one Chris had.
And I'd never heard anything about this, and I started reading through it. And they were talking contamination period of like 1960 at that time to 1986.
Chris was born right in the middle of that time.
And they're talking about heart defects.
Babies born with holes in their hearts or other deformities, so they can't effectively pump oxygenated blood through their bodies.
And it was this eureka moment. I was like, wait a second. This completes the puzzle. Why did I have this heart defect? Where did it come from?
Chris's well-paid banking job was putting too much stress on his renovated heart. So he moved back to North Carolina to be closer to family and married a paramedic named Lacey. She's been helping him fill in the pieces of the puzzle of Camp Lejeune's past. And not just for Chris, but for others who trace their health problems to that poisoned water at Camp Lejeune. Chris started asking lots of questions about his earliest days on Earth. He shows me his baby book. Inside is his birth certificate and an old clip from a local newspaper.
This, which was the announcement of my birth, became the proof of my contamination.
His father, Johnny, is devastated that his career in the military put his kid in danger.
Well, you know, I spent 30 years in the Marine Corps, and I'm proud to have served my country, and I still consider myself a true patriot. But it makes me feel sad that they weren't honest with me up front. And then later on that my son would suffer, and I almost lost him. And that is... sad, because, you know, again, the Marine Corps is, you know, honor, courage, commitment. That's their ethos. You expect them to take care of your family when you're off doing all the things that you've got to do.
It's twilight. Chris and Lacey have brought me to a military cemetery, about an hour drive from the base. It's been here since the Civil War. We're looking at row after row of simple white gravestones. Many fallen Union soldiers are buried here. But mixed among them are much more recent graves. Lacey reads one of them.
This one just says, infant, October 25th, 1972, son of, and then it lists the service member's name, USMC.
United States Marine Corps.
Here's a baby, son of, Lance Corporal, lived less than a year. Here's another, son of Corporal, lived for 5 months.
What year?
1984.
All these babies died in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's when drinking water at Camp Lejeune was contaminated with TCE and other toxic chemicals.
We're standing here, and the graves of 8 to 10 babies are within 5 feet of you. And just this half a row right here were half a dozen babies. It's astounding. There are no words for this. It's tragic, it's sad. And could you imagine the families during this time period? And why didn't anybody think to ask? Why so many babies? What's going on in a national cemetery that we have rows of babies?
According to data Reveal got from the National Cemetery Administration, military families buried 469 babies here in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s.
But for the grace of a God or an almighty power or luck or whatever you would call it, I could very easily be resting here. And, you know, it's a reminder of how fortunate I am, but it's also terribly sad because so many lives were cut so short, and you think about how each of these children were denied a future and what kind of an impact they could have had on the rest of us. And it really makes you wonder why we don't protect our unborn children more.
Decades later, there's not enough information to know whether contaminated water caused those deaths. And that box Johnny remembers on the wall of his house at Camp Lejeune, now he wonders if it's a clue that the military knew far more about the risks than they were telling Marines.
About the time that Chris was born, those other babies were dying. A doctor in Tucson was treating infants with deformed hearts at his clinic. He realized that many of them were coming from the same part of the city. When we come back, Elizabeth follows how that Tucson doctor helped spark a 20-year fight between scientists and the chemical industry. That's next on Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're revisiting a show from earlier this year, where we exposed how the Trump administration rejected science that links a chemical called TCE to infant heart defects. Scientists told us that the White House rewrote a report to downplay the dangers of TCE. Scientists have known about this risk for decades. Some of the first warning signs go all the way back to the 1970s, when Chris Orris was born at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Around the same time, a cardiologist was treating babies with heart defects in Tucson, and he noticed that many of the children came from the same part of the city, but he didn't know why. He got a big clue in the 1980s when TCE was found in the tap water there and around the country.
An ABC News survey has found that some wells in 34 states have been shut down because a toxic chemical called TCE has been found in the water supply. ABC's Peter Lance has been investigating.
Those wells provided tap water to the neighborhoods where the babies with heart defects were born.
Since 1981, 7 public wells there have been shut down.
Once Tucson shut down its TCE-contaminated wells, that cluster of babies with heart defects disappeared. But the question remained, how does TCE affect the human body? Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren goes to Tucson, where scientists have been working to understand that, even as the chemical industry has worked to undermine their research.
That's the sound of a heart beating on an ultrasound, one of those machines doctors use to let parents see their babies before they're born. But this isn't a human heart. It's from a chicken embryo. I'm looking at it with Professor Ray Runyon in his lab at the University of Arizona.
I'm trying to keep them warm because their heartbeat is 10. As you can see, they're moving around a little bit.
If you've ever cracked an egg and found a yolk with some blood in it, that's kind of what this looks like. There's a dark red spot in the center with thin red lines stretching out like a web across a pool of bright yellow yolk. Each embryo floats in a glass bowl that looks like a custard cup. The bowls are covered in plastic wrap, so Ray can press the ultrasound wand right up to the embryo.
I think we have the probe sitting there right over the ventricle. And so we're getting the contraction of the ventricle, and it's pushing the blood through one of the valve openings.
A few days ago, Ray injected these chicken eggs with watered-down TCE.
So this is a six-day chick embryo that was treated between days 2 and 3 with 10 parts per billion TCE, and then left to in the incubator to grow a little older to the point where we could see the heart.
Ray's a professor of cellular and molecular medicine, and he talks like one. I'm constantly asking him to explain and re-explain his scientific terms and experiments. He gets pretty excited by all this stuff.
It's actually the cardiac physiology is changing, and because of that, the heart's malforming from the change in the flow through the heart.
Here's what he means by that. If an embryo is exposed to TCE, the heart muscles might not develop properly, so blood won't pump through the heart as strongly as it should. That can cause deformities. Ray started researching TCE in the mid-1990s. That's when that cardiologist who discovered the cluster of heart defects in kids walked into his lab.
And he said, we have this issue with TCE. Can we do something to find out what the molecular cause is? And so we started doing some experiments.
In the year 2000, Ray published his first discovery. It confirmed a link between TCE and heart problems.
We were so proud of ourselves for seeing TCE causing an effect.
It was a breakthrough. Ray had figured out one of the ways this chemical was damaging hearts at a molecular level. What Ray hadn't grasped yet was how important TCE is to the chemical industry. Today, its market size is about $350 million worldwide. That's expected to grow by $100 million by 2025. And you can find it in dry cleaners, auto repair shops, refineries, and factories that make batteries or medical devices. So any limit on TCE would be a big deal for the people who make and use it. And that soon became obvious to Ray.
And that's the first time I discovered the Halogen Solvents Industry Alliance because they wrote a rebuttal to our paper.
A rebuttal letter is how one scientist tells the whole scientific community that they think another scientist's work is wrong. Ray had never heard of this halogenated solvents group. He didn't even know there was such a thing. It's an interest group that lobbies for chemical manufacturers. And the letter? It criticized the way Ray conducted the study and his conclusions. He'd done lots of studies before, and no one had questioned his methods. He took it personally. It felt like an attack on his integrity as a scientist.
It was a sort of a new realm. It was kind of eye-opening. And it slowed us down a little bit, I think, because, yeah, you're going to get people coming back and asking every detail of the experiments.
Ray did what he does best. He went back into his lab. He and other scientists published dozens of studies about the dangers of TCE. They did experiments in lab animals that showed how it damages fetal hearts. They studied neighborhoods contaminated with it and found more human babies born with heart defects than in other communities. And Ray discovered 4,000 genes that TCE alters.
The gene changes mean something when approximately a third of the genes expressed in your cells at that time are altered, that there's got to be a consequence on the muscle cells as they develop, and so we're getting defects.
But when Ray or another scientist published a breakthrough, the chemical industry shot back. They paid lobbyists and their own scientists to dissect the studies and undermine the research. Meanwhile, year after year, the EPA failed to enact any new restrictions on TCE. And in retrospect, the industry's game plan seems obvious.
This is standard operating procedure by polluters and manufacturers of dangerous products.
David Michaels was the head of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, for President Obama. Now he's a professor of epidemiology at George Washington University. When I visit him at his Washington, D.C. office, he's fact-checking his second book about how industries stir doubts about science.
When it becomes clear that a product they make or a product that's being let off into the air or into the water is making people sick, the first thing the industry does, and the trade associations especially, is to hire scientists to try to show that there's uncertainty.
He says chemical companies take their cue from other industries that have fought back against science for decades.
They learned from the tobacco industry that all you need to do is question the studies that are being used. And even if there are dozens and dozens of studies, as there were with tobacco and as there are with TCE, by focusing on each individual study and saying, well, here are the flaws in this study, and there are other studies, we're going to ignore them for other reasons, but they don't look at the overall picture.
You might expect this from the chemical industry. There's a lot of money at stake. But what you might not expect is that government agencies also tried to block regulation of TCE. Wei Shui Chu experienced this firsthand. He was working at the EPA in 2003 and leading a team of scientists. They were trying to figure out how much TCE you can safely breathe, drink, or touch. But even before they could publish their findings in what's called an assessment, their work was attacked.
The other federal agencies basically got a crack at EPA's assessment before it was released to the public. Whereas previously, EPA had autonomy as to developing its own assessments.
President George W. Bush let the Pentagon, NASA, and other government agencies review that assessment, and they raised a lot of concerns. Today, the chemical is found at 1,400 military facilities and 800 Superfund sites. Any new rules to clean up TCE could cost them billions of dollars. Wei Shui, who's now a toxicology professor at Texas A&M, says the agencies should have stayed out of EPA's work.
Because they are an interested party, and so I feel like that they have a conflict of interest.
Wei Shui says the Pentagon and chemical companies slowed down his risk assessment by nearly a decade. In the meantime, many cleanups were stalled. Military workers and families who lived on and near bases like Camp Lejeune kept getting exposed to TCE. In 2011, Wei Shui's assessment finally came out. It was 1,200 pages long. It concluded that TCE causes cancer. And tiny whiffs of it early in pregnancy can potentially deform fetal hearts. Wei Shui says there was an upside to all that delay that the industry probably hadn't intended.
Ironically, during that delay from 2002 through 2011, when we finally released it, the evidence got stronger. And so it's a little bit, ironic that actually it turned out stronger because of the delay.
Then finally in 2016, Congress passed a law giving EPA more power to regulate toxic chemicals. When President Obama signed it, he said it replaced a 40-year-old law that had failed to protect Americans from toxic chemicals.
Only five have been banned. Five. And only a tiny percentage have even been reviewed for health and safety. The system was so complex, it was so burdensome, that our country hasn't even been able to uphold a ban on asbestos, a known carcinogen that kills as many as 10,000 Americans every year. And I think a lot of Americans would be shocked by all that.
Obama said fixing this law was so urgent that Republicans and Democrats had stopped feuding and worked together.
For the first time in our history, we'll actually be able to regulate chemicals effectively.
It's hard to overstate how ubiquitous TCE is, but this should give you an idea of its scope. EPA found that 300,000 people working at dry cleaners and tens of thousands of employees of small manufacturing shops are exposed to it. It's also found in the public water systems in 41 states and at those 1,400 military sites we talked about. And after Obama signed the updated Toxic Substances Control Act, it was up to his EPA chief, Gina McCarthy, to decide whether to use it to restrict TCE. And the clock was ticking. She got advice from the agency's top scientist, Tom Burke.
I said, well, Gina, with a chemical where there's pervasive exposure, and it's in the air, and it's in the drinking water, and it's in the indoor air, well, then there's an opportunity, an important opportunity, and I think a responsibility to reduce those exposures and to protect public health. That's what we do.
In the final days of the Obama administration, McCarthy proposed banning TCE for some uses. For instance, it would be illegal to use it at a dry cleaners or to spray it on metal parts to remove grease. But that didn't happen.
I will keep working with Congress, with every agency, and most importantly, with the American people, until we eliminate every unnecessary, harmful, and job-killing regulation that we can find. We have a lot more coming. It's going to be happening.
As you can hear, President Trump made his intentions known right away. The TCE bans were dropped. Former OSHA Director David Michaels says Trump hired people at the EPA who put up a welcome sign for chemical companies.
There are people at the EPA in the White House who did this on the outside for industry before they came into the administration. So they're going to listen much more carefully. They're going to buy what the industry is out there selling.
People like Nancy Beck. She testified before a congressional committee on behalf of chemical companies in March 2017.
I'm honored to be here today representing the American Chemistry Council. My name is Nancy Beck, and I've spent over 15 years working at the intersection of science and policy.
And just a few weeks later, she took a new job, heading up the EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention for President Trump.
I spent most of my career working at state government, federal government. Everyone knows most recently I came from the American Chemistry Council.
The American Chemistry Council is exactly what it sounds like, an intergroup for chemical companies. Before that job, Beck worked in George W. Bush's White House. A 2009 congressional investigation found that her office at the White House helped the chemical industry and the Pentagon delay Wei Shui's assessment for nearly a decade. In 2019, Beck moved from the EPA to Trump's White House. Another veteran of the American Chemistry Council replaced her. I asked for an interview with Nancy Beck and others from the Trump administration. No one would talk to me. The trade groups wouldn't talk either. But I did get an interview with someone who has been one of the biggest critics of the fetal heart research. His name is John DeCesso. I meet him at his office in Alexandria, Virginia. His wall is covered with photos of his grandkids and his screensaver. So why do you have an embryo as your screensaver?
I'm an embryologist. I teach embryology at Georgetown. This is really important to me. When you watch them in the dish and their hearts are beating and you see the blood flowing, you can get hypnotized by it.
There's another embryologist in this story. That's Ray Runyon, the scientist at the University of Arizona we heard from earlier. On the surface, Ray and John seem to have a lot in common. They're about the same age, with silver hair and medium builds. But their work couldn't be more different. Ray and his colleagues have spent the past 20 years researching TCE on behalf of universities. John, meanwhile, spent those same years working for consulting firms on behalf of chemical companies, poking holes in other scientists' papers, including Ray's, writing rebuttals, but never doing actual lab work. Until now. John recently published his first lab study on TCE, and he got a chance to present it at the EPA.
Maybe there were 15 to 20 people in the room, and on the line there were, it sounded like there were about four or five.
John shows me the PowerPoint he used.
And we made our presentation to them, talked to them about the data. They asked questions.
John told them he found no increase in heart defects from TCE. I should mention that Chemical Trade Groups funded his research, and one of his co-authors works for Dow Chemical.
So why was EPA interested in your research?
I think it's because this is the first time there's been a very solid study that contradicted what was already published by the Arizona group.
Your research is funded by the companies that produce this chemical and have a financial interest in it being accepted and a financial interest in not cleaning it up. So does that influence your science?
I don't think so. The rats don't know who paid for the study. And admittedly, I'm sure they funded it because I think I had lots of reasons to believe it would not come out as a positive thing. But there's no way you're going to examine a heart, and if there's a hole in the heart, you're going to say it isn't there. I mean, it's either there or it isn't there. And that's objective.
When Ray saw John's study in a respected science journal, he was livid. This time he wrote the rebuttal. He pointed out that John's one study couldn't refute all the data from the 20 years of research he and his colleagues had done.
I have a hard time imagining how they can sleep at night, knowing that they're trying to basically roll back the standards and expose people. And, you know, obviously, big money gets in the way.
It's so nice to meet you, Ornella.
Nice meeting you, Elizabeth.
Ray introduces me to his colleague, Ornella Selman. She worked with him on TCE research for 10 years. John's paper really got to her, too.
To me, it's amazing that they're just so intent to prove that the studies were wrong. They were wrong. Well, I mean, it's a little bit too coincidental that just their studies, right? Therefore, all other studies are bogus. It's not a scientific approach. I'm sorry.
Did you see the rebuttal to our letter?
Yeah. My question is, why should we risk exposing people, pregnant mothers and children, to higher level of TCE before we are absolutely sure that TCE does not have that effect? Who's to benefit from it? Not the general population. The only people that I see benefit from it is those industries that want to use TCE and they don't want to spend money for cleaning up those sites.
Back in February, right before we first aired this story, the EPA came out with its new draft assessment on how dangerous TCE is. That's the report we mentioned at the top of the show. We found that the Trump White House directed the EPA to basically rewrite the report before releasing it. We know this because Elizabeth got a copy of an earlier draft by EPA scientists. Elizabeth told me what changed after the White House got involved.
In the draft the scientists wrote, they calculated unsafe levels of TCE based on how it might damage a fetal heart. The new draft, the one the White House changed, doesn't do that. It bases the math on how much TCE causes immune disorders, and those levels are much higher, like 500 times higher. Now, Al, to give you a sense of how much this changed the report, if you take the original draft by the EPA scientists and you look for the term cardiac toxicity, you can find it more than 300 times. But if you look at that phrase in the draft that was rewritten on the direction of the White House, you don't find that term at all. It was completely eliminated. All of this matters because future regulations could be set based on these calculations. That would leave fetal hearts at risk, according to EPA's own scientists.
If the report says that TCE is dangerous and even admits that it's been linked to fetal heart defects, then why is it such a big deal that the White House changed the report?
Well, the bottom line is this could open the door for the EPA to set looser restrictions on TCE in the future. That's because scientists believe it takes only an infinitesimal amount of TCE to cause fetal heart effects. It takes more TCE to cause other problems. So to give you an idea of the scale, let's say it takes 7 soda cans of TCE to cause immune problems. On that scale, it would take just 1 teaspoon of TCE to cause fetal heart defects. So you can tell why the chemical industry would want the government to base its findings on immune problems, because it could justify allowing people to use a lot more TCE and to be exposed to a lot more TCE.
That's Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren. After Elizabeth's story first aired, it got the attention of members of Congress. During a hearing this summer, Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington grilled Nancy Beck about her role in changing the EPA report. Beck is the former chemical industry lobbyist who worked at the White House.
So, Dr. Beck, yes or no, were you involved or responsible for the direction of the White House to remove the cardiac birth defects from those documents?
Senator Cantwell, I think you're referring to an interagency review process, which is during that process, the lead agency has the authority and they have the pen.
So did you advocate for removal of cardiac birth defect risk from those documents? Did you advocate for that? Yes or no? That's all I'm asking.
Senator, what you're asking for is deliberative information.
Deliberative information is her way of saying she's not going to tell us. Deliberative privilege lets the White House keep its conversations with agencies secret. The EPA still hasn't done anything to restrict TCE, so companies can continue to use it at dry cleaners, auto shops, and countless other places where the chemical has been used for decades, polluting communities around the country. This week's show was edited by Deb George and our executive producer, Kevin Sullivan. We had additional editorial support from Esther Kaplan. Our associate producer was Najib Amini. Claire Mullen mixed the show with help from our production manager, Amy Mustafa. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help from Mwende Inahosa and Brett Simpson. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson. And remember, there is always more to the story.
From PRX.